September 2017. Desmond Chum, a Chinese businessman and entrepreneur, had left China to forge a life in the West. He had left behind his ex-wife and son and the businesses that he had built up. But Desmond believed it was no longer safe to do business in China. Successful millionaires had been disappearing since 2012. There was a change in the air. September 2017, he got a call. His ex-wife had disappeared, and he did not hear another word from her until a couple of weeks ago. Desmond had written a book documenting he and his wife's business deals with many key figures in the Chinese Communist Party, details of their lavish lifestyle. He'd also written in the book about the unexplained disappearance of his wife, Whitney Duan. And then, suddenly, just days before publication, there she was on the phone asking him not to publish the book. To tell us about those calls, what exactly is in the book that has now been published called Red Roulette, an insider's story of wealth, power, corruption and vengeance in today's China, I'm pleased to welcome Desmond Chum to the program. Desmond, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
But before we get to the detail in the book, tell us about those phone calls from your ex-wife. What did she say?
What happened was last Friday, Wall Street Journal and Financial Times both published a story about her disappearance and my upcoming book. And she hasn't been heard of. I picked the date of publishing is fourth anniversary of her disappearance. And over those 4 years, she'd never been heard. The government even never acknowledged taking her. And on Sunday, she reached out to my mom and my cousin and asked me, because it's middle of night here in England, so asked me to call her. And she asked me to cancel the book launch, which was last Tuesday.
Did she say where she had been? What had been the circumstances for all these years?
No, she didn't. There are several things she mentioned. One of the first questions I asked her is, what's your charge? She said that's confidential and she cannot disclose. And then she said she have no news of the outside world over the last 4 years. And her mom passed away in June this year, and she just learned about it after coming out on last Saturday, the Saturday before now.
You're sure it was her?
Yes. I'm sure it was her. Although my son talked to her mom for the first time in 4 years. I mean, he's 12 now. He hasn't talked to her since he was 8. He was looking at me like, that's not the voice I remember. But, you know, for 8 years old, it's a, yeah.
What a desperate act, though, to attempt to frustrate this publication. There must be considerable anxiety about your book.
Yeah, I think, not to be boastful, I think nobody in my situation, which is sort of elites of the business world in China and have intimate dealing with the political leadership, has ever come out and tell their story.
So what did you say to her?
You mean the book?
Well, what did you say to your wife when she asked, please delay this publication? How did you respond?
My first response in my mind was, some bureaucrat in Beijing must be thinking, you know, at the snap of a finger, they can take any book off the bookshelf across China. And this is not China. I mean, you know, it's the weekend. The book's going to come on Tuesday.
It's out there now.
Right. I mean, the book is either already in the bookstore or on the way to bookstore. Contract already been signed. The bookstore already booked the books. And even if I wanted to, I couldn't recall them. But that's not something they would think of.
Can you take us back to how it was that you grew to get such wealth and influence within China? Because you're not part of the sort of party aristocracy.
No, not by any means. I actually, Whitney's case and my case, we both come from. She come from the countryside of China. I left China when I was 10. What happened was, detail in the book is, the book, first of all, it wasn't just about our business. It was about my life. Hmm. It was my memoir. So it started from the beginning of my life and my grandparents and who they are and all that. Obviously, you know, what happened in the last 10, 15 years featured prominently because it's of such importance and it mirrored the rise of China. And it all happened because early 2000s, Whitney struck up a relationship with the wife of the then premier, Wen Jiabao. And then eventually we went into business partnership with them. And then we did, you know, multiple operations and business deals and together with them.
I mean, that is extremely close to the absolute core of power.
Yes. Yes. And because of that relationship, we are always dealing with sort of ministers of China and the top echelon of political players.
So this was a time in China in which to acquire wealth, to act entrepreneurially was absolutely the thing to do. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that was a time where multiple things. I think, first of all, it was a time of sort of everybody believe in the future, right? Mm-hmm. The government's grip on the society is loosening, right? I mean, media become more free. You know, Olympic is on the way a few years out. The business is booming. Everybody trying new things. It's the go-go years of China.
And did you, in your personal sense there, are you acquiring wealth for the benefit of the country, or are you acquiring wealth on your own account? What's the balance between those two things?
I think it's, I think first of all, at that period in time, everybody believe we are, you know, we are sort of going to go the way of the West. We're going to be more like the West. And everybody's thinking the future would be bright. And in terms of wealth, I think yes and no. I mean, for us, it's obviously a sense of achievement. You know, we're building a business, you're getting wealthier, and that wealth enable you to explore the world in a way you never able to explore before. But the other sense, I mean, because we grow up, I mean, she and me are about the same age. Mm. We both grow up in the early, late stage in a cultural revolution. We, you know, the Communist Party in my time, you know, always tell us, you know, we read the comic books of the time, it's, you know, to sacrifice yourself for the greater good. And we truly do believe that. You know, the two of us start charity giving right after we start making money. So if you trace back, you know, in the beginning of 2000s, we start giving, you know, we give a cup endowment to the Harvard University, and we have been sponsoring scholars and building libraries and all that throughout the years. And in China, that's no tax deduction for charity giving. It's a direct deduction of your net wealth. So yes, we enjoy the benefit of accumulating wealth, but we really do feel a sense of responsibility to the larger society.
I mean, that is an extraordinary transition, as you say, to grow up in the Cultural Revolution, to then emerge, you know, as a striving adult in a country which is transformed, in a country which is encouraging this sort of personal endeavor, the personal acquisition and accumulation of vast wealth. That is such a change.
Yeah, it is a stunning experience. I mean, looking back, you know, I mean, I remember I talk about one of the scenes I've talked about in a book, and I always explain my mind, is four families of us, we were on the way to France, and with three private jets. And actually, the two of the jets were empty because everybody was just want to, you know, sort of play cards together in one jet. And then we were on the way to, you know, the Lafayette, Chateau Lafayette. We were on the way to Paris to have a three-star dinner, like, a, you know, with a bottle of 1900 Chateau Lafayette. And I on the plane, I was, you know, I was looking at this and I was telling, you know, the people we were traveling with, I was like, looking back in our life, I mean, the distance we have covered. You know, in our age, when we were teenager, if we can get a Phoenix brand bicycle, that's like a true achievement.
Never mind a Rolls Royce, a private jet.
Well, no, at that time we were talking, you know, we were like paying cards in one jet and two jets just touring him, you know, along because nobody wanted to sit in them. Everybody won't get it in one, you know, together. It's just like, you know, just the distance, what happened in the China over that, what was it, you know, 30 years was stunning. And then, you know, people,
Tell me how you met your future wife, Whitney.
It was, I start my career in private equity, so in Hong Kong, and then I was with a U.S. firm. I'm definitely the first batch of private equity professional in the region, in Greater China region. And I moved to Beijing in 97. They moved me up there to run their office in Beijing and Shanghai. And then year 2000, I decided to, you know, quit the firm and then go the entrepreneurial rank because I feel like I was standing by the riverbank as a private equity professional. I'm looking at the flow of the river just like absolutely rushing me by. And I was like, you know, I got to jump in. I got to jump in and try and let the flow carry me. I may swim, I may sink, but at least I know I'm with the flow. I don't want to be left behind. So in year 2000, I resigned from the firm and I joined a, you know, that was a tech, you know, the early tech bubble years. I joined a software company, and then she was working on a hardware company. So the two of our company were talking about a merge, like between hardware and software, and then making a complete offering. And the merge never happened, but sort of the merger between us happened.
Nicely put. She is, as you said, an extraordinarily well-connected woman. Was she perhaps too close to power?
Yeah, I think it's. I think two things here. One is, you know, we don't have the bloodline, so to speak. In a book, I talk about red aristocrats, and then it goes by bloodline: who your grandfather was, who your father was. And we, either of us, both of us, don't have the bloodline. Hmm. And then the second thing is, I think we've, you know, in her case, she fly too close to the fire, and that was that.
You've left your sense of China now. Does it still have that sense of common purpose?
One of the things I really detail is, I think the 08 financial crisis really changed the leadership and the society's view of the Western model. And, you know, at that time, the view was, oh, wow, you know, we think we're going to be like you, but look at you. You are all crumbling and crashing. Look at us. We are not doing so bad. You know, if not us holding the exchange rate of steady, the rest of Asia will crash. So that really changed the leadership's view of where they want to take the country and how they want to take the country. And then that's, you know, being a state-controlled economy and society, that's always this tendency to snap back to that model. So after 08, as I detail my own experience in the book, you know, I start having party apparatus. Start to setting up in my company. I have, you know, I have a joint venture with a state owned enterprise. They assign party secretary into my company. Mm-hmm. I need to talk to him about corporate decisions. So things are really already starting to change after 08. I think what happened with Xi Jinping come, it just go on a different pace. He doesn't fundamentally change it, but he fundamentally changed the pace of change.
And to a position where now it is that great mixture of success and total power. It's a remarkable hybrid.
It's I think it's a complete dictatorship.
Mm. Desmond, thank you. And for those who are intrigued by this skimming of a remarkable tale, Desmond's book, Red Roulette, An Insider's Story of Wealth, Power, Corruption and Vengeance in Today's China, published by Simon & Schuster, available in shops and libraries. Desmond, very grateful. You must still hold fears for Whitney's safety. Let us hope that resolves well.
Yeah, really wish that.
Desmond, thank you. Desmond Shum.